last week we started to learn the halachos of Rosh Hashanah. I just want to continue in the halachos of Rosh Hashanah. I think we have one more shiur before Rosh Hashanah next week. So this week I want to get into some of the issues relating to Erev Rosh Hashanah, some of the issues relating to the night of Rosh Hashanah, and then God willing next week we'll do Tkiyah Shofar and Musaf, which is generally considered to be like the more serious halachic discussion relating to Rosh Hashanah. Not that this isn't serious, but it's, I guess, less so than Shofar and Musaf, which is obviously the core of the day of Rosh Hashanah. I believe we started to discuss the minhag to do Ataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah. The Shari Tshuva in Sifkat and Gimel, when he talks about the halachos of Erev Rosh Hashanah, the Shari Tshuva in Tav Kuf Pei Aleph says that you should do Ataras Nedarim, and we do that for several reasons. One of them, probably the most poignant of them, is that the Gemara says that if someone violates the sin of Nedarim, it has a very, very terrible consequence. That a person who violates Nedarim, ba'avon Nedarim, banim mesim k'shem k'tanim, children, Rachman al-Islam, die young, and all sorts of horrible things. So one thing we really don't want on our heads going into Rosh Hashanah is Nedarim. It also highlights the power of speech. Nedarim has the ability to highlight that here you have something that normally, when God gave us the Torah, things were set in place. There are things that are aser, things that are mutter. We can't make something aser, you would think. We can't make something that's totally mutter and turn it into an issur d'oraisa. But with nedarim, we can. By the power of our speech, we have the ability to say, here's something that's totally mutter, I'm allowed to use this chair, but if I take a neder, that this chair is going to be aser ba'anah for me to use, this chair becomes an issur d'oraisa. So it becomes a very, very serious thing, and that teaches us a little bit about the power of speech. In Halicha Shlomo, the Sefer of the Minhagim of Rav Shlomo Zalman and Psakim of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, it says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, when his grandchildren were 12 years old, he would tell them that you should contemplate exactly what this means, the Ataras Nedarim, because a neder is something that even a 12-year-old can affect. Normally in Judaism, you need to be bar mitzvah in order to be able to make any sort of kinyan, in order to be chayiv in anything. But for Nedarim specifically, even a mufla samach l'ish, someone who's not yet quite bar mitzvah, is able to affect Nedarim. And he would tell them that this applies to you already. He would tell them when they're 12 years old, and think about what that means about the power of speech. Now, how qualified does a Beis Din have to be in order to serve as the Beis Din for Ataras Nedarim? The answer is not especially. They just need to be three males over bar mitzvah. You get them together, and you do Ataras Nedarim in front of them. It's definitely preferable to have the three dayanim hear from one person at a time, and instead of, some people just want to get out of there as quickly as possible, so they have the three and the three, and then they flip. It would be preferable to have three dayanim hear from one person at a time. But what's most important is that Ataras Nedarim is not just some random set of words that appear in the siddur or the machzor, that you just say this random set of words and then you're absolved. You're supposed to actually understand what you're saying. Now, we're always supposed to understand what we're saying, but over here it really doesn't do anything if you don't understand what you're saying. The whole point is that you're asking the Beis Din to absolve you of the neder. So if you don't understand it in the Hebrew, as it's printed in the siddur, say it in English. Rabbi Moreno, Harav Shechter, told us that for years, for decades in a row, Rav Soloveitchik on Erev Rosh Hashanah would gather Beis Din together, and he would say, in English, he would say, I had this minhag for many years that I stand during Chazaras Hashatz, and that I stand during Kriyas HaTorah, but I'm getting older, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep up this minhag, so I don't have charata on the minhag, I don't regret keeping the minhag, but I'm just not sure that I'm going to be able to continue to keep it up, so I want to do Ataras Nedarim, and that's how he did it, by saying that in English. Shach said it was somewhat humorous, because he did it for like 25 years straight, and he still stood throughout Chazaras Hashatz and Kriyas HaTorah for all those years as he was getting older. But nevertheless, that's probably the most critical element that you should be aware of when it comes to the Ataras Nedarim. We also have a minhag on Erev Rosh Hashanah that the Rama writes in Sim Tav Kuf Pei Aleph, that we don't blow shofar on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Mishaburu gives the famous reasons that we're probably aware of, that we want to either confuse the Satan, not going to get into what that means, mostly because I have no idea, or because we want to differentiate between the shofar that we've blown the whole month, where we we're not really obligated to, it's just a minhag, versus the shofar we're going to blow on Rosh Hashanah, where that's a mitzvah d'oraisa, so we want to differentiate between the two, so we skip a day on Erev Rosh Hashanah. The nafkamina between those two reasons is if you can practice on Erev Rosh Hashanah. If it's to confuse the Satan, he probably will chop if you're practicing, and he'll realize that you're still planning on blowing the next day. Whereas if it's to differentiate, then by not doing it during davening, maybe you've sufficiently differentiated between the two. Then the poskim also quote, based on a medrash, that when we approach Rosh Hashanah, even though there is a certain sense of nervousness, a certain sense of anxiety that we're supposed to have, but there is no sense of doom in approaching Rosh Hashanah. That's very important. Rosh Hashanah is a day where we have a sense of joy also. There is a sense of happiness. There is a sense of excitement. Why are we excited? Because imagine someone has threatened you and you know today's the day you're going to be able to clear your name. Today's the day where the threat ends, where it's going to be over. So it's you're anxious, there's some anxiety involved, but there's also a great sense of excitement. That's what the Medrash says we have when it comes to Rosh Hashanah. We don't sit there in mourning, in avelos, wearing drab clothing. We get dressed up in our finest with a sense of confidence that everything is going to turn out properly, and that's what we do on Erev Rosh Hashanah. We go in wearing our nicest clothing with a haircut and looking proper, looking clean, and that expresses that sense of confidence. Then comes the night of Rosh Hashanah. Now, on the night of Rosh Hashanah, there is a minhag Yisrael, according to the Shulchan Aruch, and it's really based on the Gemara in two places, actually, the Gemara Maseches Krisos and Gemara Maseches Horios, that identify specific fruits and vegetables as being a good omen to eat certain fruits and vegetables. And according to one Gersa in the Gemara, it's not even to eat them, it's just to have them. The other Gersa in the Gemara, in two places in Shas, is to eat those fruits and vegetables, and it specifically identifies which fruits and vegetables, like a pomegranate, sheyirbu zuchiyosenu kerimon, we want so many zuchiyos like a rimon. I'm sure you all heard the made-up fact that a rimon has 613 seeds. Obviously, that's not true. I mean, it could be true. It could have 613, it could have 700. But someone actually did the most unscientific study in history and tried to show that it has 613. He kept on counting one after the other till he got to an average of 613. Then he stopped. And he said, you see, it's an average of 613. If you would have taken 10 more pomegranates, it would have been a different number. But that's not the point. Chazal don't say, what Chazal say is that there are a lot of seeds. So, yirbu zuchiyosenu karima. We should have a lot of zuchiyos. Many, many merits, just like the pomegranate, and many other things, you know, the fenugreek and all these other things that we're not maybe so familiar with, that have some sort of positive connotation to them. There seem to be two categories of symbolic foods when we talk about eating something that's symbolic. One is that the name itself is associated with abundance, with blessing, with something good, like a ruvya sheyir bezuchiyosenu, karti sheyichrisu sonenu, that the name of the fruit or the vegetable we associate with abundance or with blessing. The other type is a food whose nature is symbolic of blessing. Something that's very sweet. Something that, like the pomegranate, let's say, that has many, many seeds. That it's not, the name rimon does not indicate any blessing. It's not the word rimon, it's the nature of the fruit that it has very many seeds. That's why people like to make their own simanim sometimes, but you should try to model it at least after the simanim. Like the raisin celery thing does not fit any of these models. You know what I'm talking about, right? Have a raisin and celery, right? Raisin and a celery, right? That's not after any of these. That doesn't get modeled after any of these. What would be a more appropriate one, let's say, is like the candy gushers, right? That zuchiyo should gush. I don't know, something like that, sheyirbu, something like that. That seems to be the symbolism. Best off sticking with the ones that Chazal specifically identify. And the idea is that it should be a sincere form of tefillah, meaning a person, when you say yihiratzon, you should actually think and let it inspire you to these proper tefillos. And the Chazal have framed our tefillos in this way, by picking these fruits and vegetables, that these are things we should be davening for. We should be davening for our enemies to be cut off. We should be davening for our zuchuyos. And we should be davening for all those things that are appropriate. There is Although this is a wonderful minhag, and it's something that's a minhag Yisrael that we try to observe, there it comes with a whole host of halachic issues that have to be dealt with. When you're going to bring fruits to the table, at some point during the meal on the night of Rosh Hashanah, because you have issues relating to Shechianu, you have issues relating to brachos. When do you say a bracha? What do you say a bracha on? Especially if there's a Yehi Ratzon associated with each and every one. So some people will say the bracha and say the Yehi Ratzon and then eat the fruit. That probably should not be done. Probably you say the bracha, then you eat the fruit, and then you say the Yehi Ratzon. Once you made a Bar Priya Eitz once, you don't have to make a Bar Priya Eitz on everything that's Ha'eitz. That covers you for the other Ha'eitzes. Then you could say the Yehi Ratzon before you eat the subsequent fruits, because it's you already covered the Bar Priya Eitz. Why do we make a bracha at all? Isn't it in the middle of the meal? No, people do it after they wash, right? You wash, and you sit down, you have your hamotzi, a little, many people have honey on their challah, and then you start with the whole simanim. So we make the bracha because it's not really part of the meal. Rosh Hashanah says that there are some that have the minhag that do this before they wash, that have all of these fruits before they even wash. Rosh Hashanah preferred not doing it that way, because then it raises a suffix about whether you require a bracha achrona, and we'd rather not get involved in whether you need a bracha achrona, a separate bracha achrona for them. Yeah, for bracha rishona, it's going to require its own separate bracha rishona. But for bracha achrona, right? For bracha achrona, it's still going to be covered under the general bracha achrona. Now, there's also an issue of the seder habrachos. Whenever you have a bunch of different fruits, we don't just eat whatever we stick our hands out and reach first. There's a halacha of the seder of the brachos. Any of the shivas haminim, the seven species that Eretz Yisrael is praised with, come before everything else. So, most poskim point out, therefore, you should eat the rimon, for example, before you eat the apple and honey. Others say, well, if you really like the apple and honey better, that's more chaviv, and maybe you should eat the apple and honey first. So you have all of these discussions, these conversations about what really comes first, how to do it. Now, which night of Rosh Hashanah do we do all of these simanim? Both nights, right? We probably do them both nights. Both nights are appropriate for tefillah. However, there's another minhag that's also sometimes confused with this minhag, and that is the minhag to say a Shechianu on the night of Rosh Hashanah. But which night do we say a Shechianu? Do we have a Shechianu fruit? Which night of Rosh Hashanah do we have a Shechianu fruit? Dafka the second night. A lot of people make this mistake. They think, oh, we need the Shechianu fruit on the first night. Now, why is it that we have a Shechianu fruit to begin with? The whole reason we have a Shechianu fruit is because whenever a Yom Tov comes, we say a Shechianu on the Yom Tov. The fact that it's a Yom Tov itself requires a Shechianu. Now, on a second day of Yom Tov, it's a separate day of Yom Tov, and therefore requires its own Shechianu. But Rosh Hashanah, we know, intuitively, if we've ever been to Israel, we know that Rosh Hashanah is a little bit different than other Yom Tov Shenis, because they even keep it in Israel, right? Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaArichta, possibly. It's one long day. And therefore, it's a suffix whether we require a Shechianu on the second night. Since we're not sure whether we need a Shechianu or don't need a Shechianu for the Yom Tov, we specifically get something else to say a Shechianu on. We get something else to say a Shechianu on, and that Shechianu will cover both the Shechianu for that something else and the Shechianu for the Yom Tov. So what do you get? A star fruit. I don't know, something, some exotic fruit that you've never seen before. And by the way, there's a reason why people don't normally eat these fruits. Most of them are disgusting. Yeah. So you get a fruit that is very exotic, that is very unusual, and you say a Shechianu on that fruit, and that will also cover the Shechianu for the day. So the recommendation is either a fruit or a suit, a new beged to wear, and you say a Shechianu on that. Now, that itself also comes with certain problems in modern society, because do we say a Shechianu when we eat a fruit that we haven't eaten in a while? The halach in Shulchan Aruch is not that way. The halach in Shulchan Aruch is you say a Shechianu when you see a seasonal fruit. A fruit that's not always available. You walk into the fruit store one day, there are peaches, it's peach season. So you say a Shechianu because you're so excited that peach season has come back. That's what you say is Shachianu. But nowadays, with the ability to transport massive amounts of fruits and the ability to control environments and grow different things in different kinds of climates, you can find pretty much almost any fruit any day of the year in your local supermarket. And therefore, you probably don't have to make a Shachianu on most of the fruits that you would find, because if they're always available, even if you haven't eaten it, Shulchan Aruch says explicitly, doesn't matter whether you've eaten it or not. I remember when I was a little boy, my father asked the guy who sat next to him in shul, who was a morbidly obese fellow, who sat next to my father, and my father said to him, what are you going to make a Shachianu on? And he said, an apple. And his point was that, you know, look at me, my diet does not include very many fruits and vegetables, I can make a Shachianu on an apple. But that's not correct. He could not make a Shachianu on an apple. Why couldn't he make a Shachianu? It happens to be years later, he lost like 200 pounds and he's whatever. That's a different story. He cannot make a Shachianu on an apple because the apple's always available. So say, okay, so I'll get a new suit and I'll make a Shachianu on a new suit. That will be a safe one. Not so clear either. It would have to be something that you're very excited about. When you get a new suit every once in a while, if you're someone who doesn't buy a new suit very often, so then, and it's something that's very exciting that you buy a new suit, that would require a Shachianu. If you're a person who gets a new suit every other day, you know, some people, some men's wardrobes, they need bigger closets than their wives need, so then probably you shouldn't make a Shachianu on a new suit. I remember one of my children a few years ago, when you guys probably don't have time for leisurely activities like this, but my children are basketball fans, so when Carmelo Anthony came to New York, it was a big deal, so they one of them got, from a grandparent, I assume, a Carmelo Anthony jersey. And it was like the happiest day of his life to that point, of his short life to that point, was that he got a Carmelo Anthony jersey. And he had the mindset where he immediately said to me when he got the jersey, he was like jumping all around the house, and he said, "Ah, but do I make a Shachianu on this?" And I'm like, "Sadly, yes." <You know? laughs> Unfortunately, you probably do, but it would have to be something that generates that kind of excitement. Then you would probably make a Shachianu on something like that. So that's what we try to do. So the more exotic the fruit, the better it is in terms of the Shachianu. Now, let's say when you're doing the simanim, there are fruits that are seasonal and that you haven't seen that require Shachianu. Should you try to, on the first night when you're doing the simanim, should you try to say two Shachianus on the first night, one for the yom and one for the fruit, or should you get them all in one shot, just like you're going to do on the second night? Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, better to say two. Why should you try to lump them all together? Better not to lump them all together. On the second night, we don't have a choice. We need to, because we're not sure if the day itself warrants a Shachianu. But on the first night, better not to lump them all together. Each one deserves its own Shachianu. You have a question?
The Shachianu, does it has to be a beged?
It should be something that you buy or something that's new in your life. I actually had an interesting shayla recently. Someone asked me, a dentist who does implant dentistry, told me that he had a patient who couldn't chew properly for years, had to have like almost a liquid diet, he had terrible, terrible teeth. And he fitted him with implants. And the guy, the patient, said, "This is life-changing for me. Do I say a Shachianu?" No, I mean, it's a mistake. You don't ask your dentist, but you're supposed to ask your rabbi. But he, do I say a Shachianu? So I asked a few different poskim. I found even a tshuva. There's a tshuva in the Bera Moshe, the Debre Tzina Rav, who said that he thinks it's a double pasha that you do. That's something that you have new, that you're going to be able to that brings great simcha and changes your whole life. Probably you would make a Shachianu. So it doesn't have to be a beged per se, but it would be, Shulchan Aruch quotes a minhag not to say on shoes, on new shoes, that some are knowing, the Rama says not to say a Shachianu on new shoes. Discussion why, because animals had to die for it, I don't know, whatever the reasons might be, but that's debatable. But a nice new suit that you don't get so often would also be suffice.
Being a Shachianu, I kiddush on the first
night. Yeah.
Families are moving. public spaces and more a couple of months, but not from this whatever has been elected at that time and whatever has been committed at that time, whatever the money. Over 80% of the money we sent is an official assignment money. It comes to these agreements and online. Many of these are online for students and others together. And now professional attorneys, physicians in the center. It's a real stuff up in everything else. You get the money coming out now for elected. You can get it through a check.
Oh, you were in the middle of a question?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Do you bring a Shechianu the second I finish?
So we say the Shechianu on the fruit, having in mind
right,
that it covers the day also.
Finish.
So right, so it's not a separate Shechianu. So it's not so posh that it's okay. Shechianu is a very good topic in general. It's when you buy a new house. So the rule is as follows: when you buy something that you're going to benefit from, that an individual is going to enjoy a great deal, you make a shechianu. When a lot of people are going to benefit from and enjoy, or not even a lot, more than one person, then the bracha is different. It's a bracha of hatova meitiv. So when someone buys a house, yeah, it's hatova meitiv, but not shechianu. I remember when I got engaged, I called up Rav Schechter to tell him I got engaged, and I asked him a few shailas, and one of the shailas I asked, should my wife say a shechianu on her ring? Well, at that time, my kala, say a shechianu on her ring. He said, no, she should say hatova meitiv, because you're just as happy to give it to her as she is to receive it. So it would be hatova meitiv, not a shechianu. It's an interesting chiddush, because, right, meaning it's not the receipt of the ring that we're both so excited about, you know.
The reason I ask Spectrum is because recently, like, one of my friends in Israel sent a friend of mine in America, like, a box of tricks. He was very happy to receive it because in America, tricks don't have shapes. But in Israel, they have shapes. So, like, that's why I'm asking, what does Spectrum
mean? There are moments in life where you have to stop and think to yourself, what really makes me happy? what really should? I don't know. I'd say Shechianu on that. That's on par with the Carmelo Anthony jersey. So there are different types of shechianu. There's shechianu when you get something new, when you buy a kli chadash, but then there are brand new peros, whether you enjoy it or not. The brand new peros is that it's a simon bracha that it comes mishana l'shana, so it's a simon of a zman that has arrived. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is yonel zman hazeh, where this pre came back into season. So it's not really so much about the fruit as much as it is, you don't even have to eat the fruit meikra din. Shulchan Aruch says, you see it in the store. You don't have to spend a penny. Just say the shechianu when you see the fruit. Our minhag is, we wait till we eat the fruit, the Rama says. But the Shulchan Aruch says that even meikra din, you wouldn't even have to eat the fruit. There is an additional minhag on Rosh Hashanah that many of you are probably aware of, that we go say tashlich. So what's the idea of tashlich? The Rama writes this custom that we go to a body of water and we say a pasuk for sashlich b'mitzvus yom kal chatosim, that we're throwing all of our averos into the sea. Now that's the minhag as it's called in the Rama. How does that turn into 10 pages in the Machzor? I'm not really sure. A lot of other things were added on afterwards. But that's the minhag that's recorded in the Ramah. Now, the reason for the body of water, Post can discuss different possibilities. One possibility is that water is where we go to coronate a king. So we're showing that what's Rosh Hashanah? The theme of Rosh Hashanah is Malchios. It's the coronation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Melech. It's the affirmation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Melech. So on the day where we're Mamlich, we go specifically to a body of water. Others say that no, water is a siman bracha, it's a siman of shefa, of abundance, of plenty, of good things. So we go specifically to places. This all fits in line with the idea of all the simanim, that everything we do on Rosh Hashanah, we try to have symbolism of something very positive and of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's abundant bracha. Mishnah Berurah says that the minhag is to try to go to a body of water that has fish. Based on the idea, the Gemara says that fish aren't subject to the ayin hara, that fish are covered by the water, and therefore they don't fall victim to ayin hara. So that's a symbolism for us as well, that we shouldn't fall victim to the ayin hara. Fish are also parin v'ravin; they multiply a lot. So it's also simin bracha to go to fish. The later post can point out that if tashlich has become a social scene, if tashlich has become an environment that's not an environment that you would that would suggest the seriousness of the day of Rosh Hashanah, then maybe it's better definitely it's better not to go to tashlich in that situation, or go later. You can go after Rosh Hashanah, you go all aser to mechuba chasid and go to Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. If you ever go over the Verrazano Bridge during any time before Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, you'll hit traffic coming off the Verrazano Bridge coming back to New York, because there's a whole bunch of chasidim always at by the water right over the Verrazano, and everyone's stopping. What are those Jews doing over there? So it causes a traffic jam every single time. So people go way, way later. They say tashlich. I just want to get to one more minute, because next week, then I'll take questions. The there's a minhag, the Rama writes, that not to sleep on the day of Rosh Hashanah. This all the poskim also say, in the words of the Aruch HaShulchan, Yoshev Batel Ki Yashin Dami. If you're sitting there doing nothing, you might as well be sleeping. So there's a minhag not to sleep. That means there's a minhag to try to be productive all day on Rosh Hashanah. Try to do good, productive things. Learn more, daven more, get amass as many zuchiyos as possible. The Arizal is quoted as saying that minhag only goes till Chatzos anyhow. But Rosh Hashanah points out if it goes till Chatzos, it probably starts at Alos HaShachar, meaning you'd have to wake up really early if you want to end the minhag at Chatzos. You'd probably have to wake up really early to be awake for all that time and be involved in Avodas Hashem throughout that time. So Bez Hashem, next week we'll get into Shofar and Musaf and things of that nature. So you should not feed the